Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It is Tuesday, May 13th, 2014, and I'm just going to get right to my guest today because he's speaking to us all the way from Stockholm, Sweden, and he has a lot to say. He's Professor Ole Johansson. He's a world-leading authority in the field of electromagnetic fields, radiation, and health effects. And he sent me a list of about 500 articles he's written on this. I mean, he really is one of the most knowledgeable people on EMFs I've ever met. Well, actually, I haven't met him yet. I emailed with him, but I'm going to meet him right now, and so are you. Hi, Professor Johansson. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's a great honor to be on your show today, and it's going to be very interesting to hear your questions.
Oh, good. Well, I'm going to be very interested in hearing your answers. So the first question I have for you is, how did you get interested originally in this field in the beginning?
Oh, that was actually thanks to radio. I very rarely myself listen to radio. I have to admit that. But in the early 1980s, for some reason, on late evening, I was listening to radio in my laboratory, and I hadn't done that for months, actually, and suddenly I hear in a program a woman with the name Kajsa Wedin from one of the trade union secretariats here in Sweden. She was talking about what at that time was called screen dermatitis, meaning people that got skin irritations primarily in their face, arms, hands, upper chest, when they were sitting in the very newly introduced PC computers.
And I remember that. I remember people talking about that then. Yeah.
Yes. And I got very interested because she was asking for expertise in neurology, and I'm not a neurologist, but I'm a neuroscientist. So I thought, well, close enough, why don't I give her a call? And so I called her after the program and said that I was prepared to help her to investigate these skin problems in people sitting in front of these computer screens and also ordinary television sets. And she got very excited, and we put ourselves together with a physicist from one of the universities here in Sweden, and he is and was an expert also in the electromagnetic fields and exposure and measurements and the whole technical side. And I remember we were very enthusiastic. We met at my office here in Stockholm at the Karolinska Institute, and we drew up plans for different projects that we would apply money for and start to investigate. And no one of us really then realized that a little bit further down the road, around the corner, there were forces in play that actually didn't want us to investigate that, but that came later on. We started out in grand style, and the very first project we actually did was to, in a double-blind fashion, investigate different types of skin using advanced microscopy, looking for cells and their content of different biologically active molecules. And we looked at skin from normal healthy volunteers. We looked at skin from the people that had got the skin rashes in front of computer screens. And we also had different patient categories, like rosacea and seborrheic keratosis. Mm-hmm. And we then, in the double-blind fashion, tried to pick out which looked normal and abnormal. And to make a long story short, to our enormous surprise, it came out very easily to pick out the persons with the screen dermatitis, what we today would call electrosensitivity or electrohypersensitivity, because they had dramatic alterations in their cells of different types.
Well, what type of alterations were in their cells?
Well, you know, some cell types were more or less gone, and some others had increased dramatically in number. And you have to remember, at that time, I was a complete amateur. I didn't quite understand what I was looking at. So yeah. I showed pictures to other experts in, for instance, clinical dermatology, clinical immunology, radiation damages, etc. And they helped us, and it was very evident that what we saw was early or prolonged stages of classical radiation damage. And with that, I mean what you would have seen if you, for instance, were exposed from an atomic bomb or from other forms of radionuclides or overexposure to X-rays or overexposure to strong ultraviolet light. But they hadn't, these persons, been close to any radioactivity or X-rays or anything like that. They had just been sitting in front of computer screens, television sets, and started to report skin irritations, redness, numbness, pain, pricking sensations, etc. And at that time, we call this green dermatitis, later on electron hypersensitivity. And as you may remember, the sort of general explanation at that time was that the reason people felt these skin irritations was because of people like yourself. And when journalists, reporters, radio hosts, television program hosts, and so on, started to report on that, then it was believed that the mass media hysteria was developed. It was a mass media psychosis. But of course, that could be very easily disproven by just using, for instance, rats. And rats developed the very same kind of skin alterations. And with all due respect, rats do not listen to radio. They do not read newspapers. They do not watch television. And still, they got the same radiation damages as the persons with electrohypersensitivity.
Okay, so is there a particular description of, like, how would you, aside from getting the symptoms, how would you describe a typical person with electrohypersensitivity? Do they have a particular history?
That's a very, very important and very good question. And the simple and quick answer would be anyone. And as you probably know, there are a lot of very famous people, including, for instance, the former World Health Organization president, Gro Harlem Brundtland, who also was the Prime Minister of Norway. She's a typical sort of electrohypersensitive person, meaning that she could still work on, she could still manage her life, but with a few alterations. And then you have a scale from people with very few problems to people that are really very handicapped by their electrohypersensitivity. And from a general point of view, around 70 to 80% start with sensations from their skin and from eyes, from the mouth, for instance. And of course, these are the external boundaries towards the rest of the universe, where you have your skin, yourself stops, and the rest of the universe starts. It works like an antenna, picking up changes in the environment. And I very much like the title of your show, Toxic Free, because maybe these people in that way functions as the classical canary bird in the coal mine, telling us that something in the environment is wrong. And they are wise enough to pick themselves out of this situation and avoid getting close to, for instance, computer screens, mobile phones, low-energy light bulbs. But the rest of the population, like myself, who do not have any such sensations, we will keep on using all these gadgets. And now I'm jumping ahead a lot because now we come into the 1990s and the 2000s, because then more and more focus was being put on, for instance, long-term effects such as neurological diseases and, of course, cancer, particularly brain tumors and childhood leukemia.
Okay, we need to take a break, and we'll talk more when we come back from the break. But I have something I want to say when we come back, and then I'll let you talk again.
Okay.
You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Ole. How do you say your name? Am I saying it right?
Ole Johansson.
Ole Johansson. Thank you. That's who he is.
But you can say Ollie Johnson, you know. That's all right.
Ollie Johnson. And he's from Stockholm, Sweden. And we'll tell you more about him when we come back, too. So stay with us. Radio, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Professor Ollie Johansson. How is that?
Oh, that's good.
Good. Okay. A world-leading, tripping over everything today, a world-leading authority in the field of EMF radiation. Now, he's with the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, and that is famous for its Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. And so this is a very prestigious international organization that he's with, and he's very well recognized in this field. So what I wanted to say is, in response to what you were saying earlier about the canaries, one of the things that I found in my work with toxic chemicals is that people, when I first started being aware of toxic chemical dangers, it was at a time when people were talking about people being chemically sensitive, as if we were a special group of people and that it wasn't affecting anybody else except for this little group of people who were chemically sensitive. And so when I found out that I was responding physically to exposures to toxic chemicals, they didn't really call them toxic chemicals at the time. They just said chemicals. And so there was like something wrong with us because everybody else was could tolerate them. So there was nothing wrong with them because we were the only ones that were getting sick. Now, what I found when I started researching was that it wasn't just that I was getting sick because of some otherwise healthy materials. I was getting sick because what I was being exposed to that was making me sick were poisons. They were recognized poisons that were not being acknowledged in the consumer marketplace. And I see that it's very similar with electromagnetic fields now, because there's now a designation, and I'm not saying it's wrong to designate it this way, but there's a designation that there's a group of people who are electro-hypersensitivity. And yet, the way I see it is that these things, and I think you would agree with me, that these health effects, as you said, happen to rats. And so it's not just a select group of people. These things are happening to everyone. And I know that even myself, it's like I don't have symptoms that I know of that are related to EMFs. And so I say, oh, well, I don't need to do anything about it. But ha, 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 I do need to do something about it because it's affecting my health. And whether I see it or not, sometimes there's long-term things, which you were about to tell us about.
Oh, that's a very, very important comment of yours, you know, and there are so many threads I would like to pick up on.
Okay.
Just shortly, I today received a paper that gives a big yes to you. It's about, and I quote, metabolic and genetic screening of electromagnetic hypersensitive subjects, as well as subjects with multiple chemical sensitivity. And as you say, they have sort of deranged or rearranged chemical and genetic makeups. And so they are affected. And the question is, of course, which is the primary cause and which is the secondary cause. And then to go to normal healthy volunteers, we did in the late 1990s and early 2000 a study which really surprised us, I could tell you. Namely, we put normal healthy volunteers in front of ordinary television sets, ordinary computer screens. We exposed them. No one reported any problems whatsoever. A few of these students, because we use students, said that it was a little bit boring to sit with their back to computer screens and television sets for 8 hours. But nothing. They didn't feel anything in the skin. No rashes, no irritations, no pain, nothing. But when we looked in the microscope, they showed alterations after approximately 2 hours, as if they would have been sitting close to X-ray machines or radioactivity. And they were not at all feeling this. but the body had reacted. And as you say, that was a huge warning signal, because everyone nowadays is using mobile phones, wireless indoor phones, routers, Wi-Fi, computers, etc. And maybe we're looking ahead of a huge sort of collapse, medical collapse, when all these people have been worn out from this constant exposure. And yes. The question is, of course, what do we have in a long-term run around the corner? And I do hope, of course, that I'm wrong and that all scientists are wrong, that there isn't any risk whatsoever. But today, you know, I'm kind of flooded every day with an overwhelming amount of reports, so it's hard to really keep pace, and more and more and more are pointing into one single direction, that these exposures, they are to be seen as an environmental toxic one. They are not good for us. And if you look around in biology, you probably know that there's been a huge number of studies on different experimental animals, on organs, on tissue pieces, on cell cultures, on molecules. And to make a very long story short, no one of these, no rats, no mice, no cells, no one of them should buy and use these gadgets. But we force them to do it because we buy it, and all our cells in our body are exposed, and cells everywhere are exposed. And there are some extremely interesting studies from France, for instance, where tomato plants were exposed in a very, very well-controlled study, excellent study. And it turned out that these tomato plants, when they look at them, and I quote from the French scientists, they said they reacted as if we would have crushed them with a hammer.
Oh my
showing
God.
The same molecular sequence of damaged molecules, including a molecule called calmodulin. And they hadn't touched them. They just allowed them to be in pretty low exposure from base stations. That was it. And
wow.
Still they reacted in such a dramatic way, you know.
So what we saw
very early in the 1980s then is mimicked more or less identically in a lot of other studies. And as I say, nowadays I'm pretty stressed every morning when I get to work, because my computer looks like a pregnant woman, more or less. You know, it's more or less going to burst with information, because scientists all over the world are producing so many papers nowadays, and I'm just amazed. And I can only really talk about the Swedish authorities, but I'm amazed how rapidly all these studies are swept aside. And I just don't know why.
Yeah, I have an idea about that I want to talk to you about when we come back from the break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest is Professor Ole Johansson from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. And we're talking about EMFs, and he's written more than 500 articles about this, so he really knows his stuff. I'm sure you can all tell by listening to him. So we'll be right back. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we're having a very interesting discussion today with my guest, Professor Ole Johansson from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. And what I wanted to say was that I think that a lot of the problem with recognizing the damage from EMFs is you can't see it. And I think that that's part of the problem with toxic chemicals, too, because in both areas, we have a tremendous number of people who are looking at the studies and saying, oh, well, that's interesting, and doing nothing, because they don't think that it applies to them. But what people don't understand about EMFs and chemicals is that there can be internal damage going on. There can be damage to cells. There can be damage to DNA. And you don't actually, if I remember correctly, I think I read something somewhere about how the damage happens way before the symptoms occur, just in any kind of damage to your body, that the symptoms are one of the last things that happen, but you can be sick way before you start having symptoms. And so what's happening in our society at large globally is that we're being exposed to toxic chemicals and EMFs, which are causing damage to our bodies that we don't see. And that doesn't mean it isn't there. It just means that people aren't to the point of symptoms yet. And when we get to that point of symptoms, I think that there's going to be a point, you know, where it was like at one point the world recognized after many years of everybody smoking cigarettes that it takes 30 years to develop cancer from cigarettes. Well, I think that 30 years from, I mean, at any moment, it could be 30 years from when we all started using cell phones. I don't remember the year. But you know, when I was a child, we didn't have all these electronic gadgets. And so there's going to be a time period where suddenly we're going to start seeing the results of this, like we started making the connection between cigarettes and cancer. What do you think about that?
True, indeed, you know, and then you also have to remember if it takes 30 years from the initial transformation at the cellular level to develop a cancer, maybe it took yet another 20, 30 years before that to instigate, for instance, DNA damage, which has been shown for exposure from mobile phone telephony, for instance. And then we're talking about an exposure that happened maybe when you were a baby. You were exposed to the electromagnetic fields. You got the damage to your DNA, but it took time before it really turned into a cancer transformation at the cellular level. And then the tumor as such needs to build up to a level where a clinician can tell you, so sorry, I have something I have to talk with you about.
Yes.
So the span could be enormous. And also you have to also remember there are studies pointing to that there could be transgenerational effects, so that things may be shown later on in generations. And there is, for instance, a very famous Greek study where they looked on fertility. And to make a long story short again, in the first, second, third, and fourth generation, they didn't see anything. But in the fifth generation, the fertility was basically just gone. The population of mice used had become infertile, meaning that our grand-grand-grand-grandchildren may be infertile due to something we did 2014. And then it's too late to call back and say, hey, please, right, could you stop doing this?
Right, right, exactly right. And so it's very – why don't you tell us about the precautionary principle?
That is something that is used sometimes, and as you know, myself and others, we feel very strongly it should be used now, and especially since we are talking about toys. I mean, they are not life necessities like food, water, air to breathe, love, right, compassion, and understanding. These gadgets are toys. The precautionary principle then states that you should take precaution if you cannot rule out any form of risk. And there you should remember that, for instance, the telecom manufacturers as well as the operators, they tell you to keep a mobile phone or a similar gadget at least 1 inch away from your body. It's
but
safe,
who does
they
that?
Tell you. Yeah. Yeah, the telecom operators and manufacturers. When you buy, for instance, a mobile phone, in the thick booklet you get, somewhere it will say that you have to keep it at least 1 inch away from your body, meaning that you can never, ever touch it.
That's right.
And it's very intelligent. You know, in Sweden, we have a completely different legal system than you have in the United States. Here you can never win against a company, anything like that. You can never get any money, anything. So here companies are sort of safe. But of course in the United States, a private person can enter a court of law and win and get I mean, billions of U.S. dollars as compensation. And therefore, they quite early realized we have to have some precautionary principle of our own, and this is one of the aspects of that.
Yes.
And the first thing their lawyer will ask you if you claim you got a brain tumor, they will ask you, well, was it the left or right hand you used when you talked in your mobile phone? Well, it was actually the right hand, but we told you you cannot keep it so close to your body.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying.
So it's very, very intelligent from that point of view, you know. So they have their own precautionary principle. And also if you go to the insurance companies around the world, including the big ones like Lloyd's in the UK and Reassurance in Switzerland, they completely refuse to take responsibility for this. And they say that they will not reassure in any way, as they will not do for other things like gene-modified organisms, nanotechnology, and so on. And I feel this is very strange. They are sold to us as 100% risk-free and completely safe, but then it should be completely safe to insure them, shouldn't it?
Yes.
But they completely refuse any form of liability for this, you know.
Well, one
and
of the
this
things...
is not new.
No.
Yeah, this goes back to the early 2000s, actually. And already in London 2004, we learned about these things, that all these different levels of society claiming safety still have their own precautionary principle.
Yeah. We need to take another break, then we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Ole Johansson, Professor Ole Johansson from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. And we'll continue our discussion of EMFs right after this. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Professor Ole Johansson from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, and we're talking about EMFs. Dr. Johansson, there was a video, I think you probably saw it, it was sent to me yesterday, and I know we're both on the same mailing list about EMFs here. You're probably on many more, but we're on a common one, and that's how we met, actually. And this video... the title of it is called Look Up, and you could probably just go to YouTube and Google it or something. It's called Look Up, and the whole point of this video is to get people to see how this, all this technology of smartphones and iPads and all this, even something that we take for granted like email, has served to make us very robotic and not have personal human relationships. I wanted to bring this up, and I forgot to do it at the beginning, because I remember many years ago when I was doing some local environmental work. And we were talking about, could we email to each other? That's how new email was. And instead of having to drive, I was living in a rural area in California, and we would have to drive to a central point to one of our houses in order to have a meeting. And we were asking ourselves if we could not make the drive and email instead. And one of the members said, well, what about chocolate cake? And it was just that moment was just so... It made such an impression on me, because if we get together, we can eat chocolate cake. But it's not about the chocolate cake. It's about us being together face to face, eye to eye, hugging each other, getting to know each other as people instead of being a little electronic message. And I have a friend who's actually, I have several friends who I say, well, come over and see me. And they say, well, I talk to everybody on the phone. Can't I just talk to you on the phone? And I say, no, you have to come over and see me, or I'm coming to see you, because the human experience is so different than the electronic experience. And so here we have not only all these EMFs flying around, but it's cutting into our human experience.
Very true indeed. And I just today read that In an investigation, it has been shown in the UK, and they looked into 2,200 teenagers, that about 40% of them were deeply addicted to their wireless and smart gadgets. And for instance, here in Sweden, when I go in the underground, in the subway, and in the buses and trams and so on, it's like being part of a Matrix movie. There are just robots everywhere, you know, and I seem to be the only person alive. I'm the only one left on the planet, you know, and I love chocolate cakes, so I'm eating it, you know, and but the rest are not. They're sort of intensely focused on it, and maybe if they actually solved problems, I would be impressed. But you probably have read about that the Swedish educational system has really plummeted downwards because of lack of control, lack of quality, etc., in spite of that the Swedish schooling system contains the highest numbers of computers, smart tablets, smartphones, etc., everything. Kids here, they have everything in school, and still they don't come out as a new Albert Einstein or William Shakespeare. So I'm not so impressed by all these gadgets. And I also saw today that at the Waldorf school in Silicon Valley, they are using a computer-free environment, and it is because parents at the high-tech company like Google have demanded it. They don't want their kids to be sucked into this, you know, things that they provide us with. And provide is, in this sense, a rather negative word, I would say, you know. On the other hand, if I could be a little bit blunt, you know, Swedes are famous for liking nudity and sex and so on. When I go on the very same underground subways, trams, buses, as a man, there is no risk to view the cleavages of women because they never notice. I mean, you can do whatever you want to. You could probably steal their wallets and so on. They wouldn't react because concentrated.
I see people, you know, walking around with the little earbuds, you know, they're listening to whatever it is. And so when they're doing that, they're not aware of their environment. They're not aware of people around them. They're not aware
of
any
dangers. And as you know, there are quite a number of people that have hurt themselves badly or even been run over in traffic. We have such examples in Sweden. People on a bike, for instance, ran across a red light. And were killed instantly, you know, right in the middle of Stockholm, because they were, as you say, cut off from reality.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. So there's so much, there's actually so much we could talk about. We only have about 5 minutes left. So is there anything that you could tell us about how the situation has improved? Like, are computers any safer or thing now than they were in the 90s, or some things that you think like are basic things that anybody should be doing to protect themselves?
Well, I would like to come back to actually your commercial breaks, because they are very interesting from a Swedish point of view. They focus a lot about, I would say the core issue is that you should watch what you eat and what you drink and the quality of it. And maybe you need to use dietary supplements. And I also today read a study that is a team of Italian, Russian, and Malaysian scientists that have shown that, for instance, electro-hypersensitive people, they have a metabolic alteration with a distinctly increased plasma coenzyme Q10 oxidation ratio. That means, in layman terms, that something is wrong with the internal metabolism and it needs to be corrected in some way. And again, it's hard, of course, at this stage to know what is the culprit behind this, but at least you should take care of yourself. And I think people more and more, not only in the United States, not only in Sweden, but all over the world, they are realizing this. And they also realize they need to take care of the environment, of plants, of all the animals, all bacteria, all the water, all the food, everything, you know. And also, of course, as you know, here in Sweden, people with electro-hypersensitivity, they are officially recognized by our government and parliament as a group with a functional impairment. what we call a disability or handicap before. So they do get governmental subsidy, for instance. They have an organization that takes care of their interests. And I do hope that could spread, because these people, most of them, they can get along quite well. Actually, you can live very well without mobile phones and so on. But yes, some of them, they do need accessibility measures of on a more grand scale. So that is something that has happened the last approximately 10 years.
Well, it must be very difficult for... there's so much I want to say. First, I want to say that that... Again, we're separating out people who have, who are, as you said earlier, are canaries, who are showing a real, they're showing that there is a human response to all these electronic things, and that there's a damage, and that damage could happen to everyone. But instead of saying, oh, these people are showing it early, that, and everybody needs to be concerned about it, what the society is saying is, oh, here's this group of people who can't tolerate it, and now they have to be a special group. And you know, I'm glad that they're getting the help that they need, but the downside of it is that it separates them from everybody else who also need to be taking the same precautions. Also,
And even more so. Because
even more
the rest
so, yes.
of the population, they are not aware of it, so they really need to be careful.
That's right. And also, in terms of access, you know, I realized some years ago that there actually isn't any place I can go on Earth where I'm not exposed to EMFs, because it's so global. And all these satellites and you know more cell phone access and everything, and there is no place that I can go where I'm not being exposed to it. So all I can do is in my own home not have my wireless phone next to me, or not use my cell phone, or you know, make sure I'm sitting a certain distance from the monitor. But there's no place in the world that you can go where there's no toxic chemicals. There's no place in the world that you can go where there are not EMFs. And so we really need to be doing everything we can nutritionally to take care of our bodies. We need to reduce our exposure however we can. And we're going to run out of time in about a minute. There's so much I want to say. Are there any final things you'd like to tell us?
No, I think that's an excellent summary, and we really need an immediate and huge divine vacuum cleaner, because there's so much we need
yes.
to clean up, and I am as concerned as you are. And one of the very best way is to get more information and to listen to radio programs like this. And I say finally, don't trust me, don't trust you, go to the sources yourself. The listeners should do that. Read again, think more, and make up your mind. Is this good for you and your family or not?
I completely agree. And just in the last few seconds.
And you know, if they read enough, maybe they can then come to Stockholm and receive the Nobel Prize in physiology or medicine is the right word, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, good. So thank you so much for being on the show.
You.
And I hope you'll come back again, because this is a very big subject.
Oh, that would be lovely. Thank you so much.
About. Okay, and we'll have chocolate cake. Bye. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. Be well.